Oh, great. That was a really good introduction. Before I begin, I'd also like to acknowledge Nancy Brenner, Denise Eaton, and Laura Kahn from my division who contributed significantly to this presentation. And I have no relationships to disclose here. So as Jeanette mentioned, and I'm sure you all know, the prevalence of obesity among children and adolescents has increased dramatically in the last 30-plus years, and healthy eating and regular physical activity can help to prevent obesity. So national data related to physical activity and nutrition, as well as the factors that influence physical activity and nutrition among high school students, can help us to develop effective school-based obesity prevention programs. So the National Youth Physical Activity and Nutrition Study was created for this purpose and was conducted by CDC in the spring of 2010. And the purposes were to provide nationally representative data on behaviors and behavioral determinants related to physical activity and nutrition, to provide data to help improve the quality of youth risk behavior survey questions, and to understand associations among behaviors and their determinants and how these factors are associated with BMI. And so for today's presentation, I'm just going to focus on the first of these three aims, which is which are the data prevalence estimates. So if you're familiar with the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, NIPANs use the same exact methodology. So just to cover that briefly, it's a three-stage cluster sample design designed to produce a nationally representative sample of public and private high school students in grades 9 through 12. And you can see the response rates listed here. And after editing, we were left with a final sample of 11,429 students. So NIPANs included a 120-item questionnaire, which measured behaviors and behavioral determinants, and also included measured height and weight collected by trained data collectors, as well as a subsample of telephone interviews to measure 24-hour dietary recall. And today's presentation is just going to focus on the questionnaire and the measured height and weight. So we got parental permission to conduct these surveys using the local procedures in the jurisdictions that were selected to participate. Student participation was anonymous and voluntary, so they took the survey during one regular classroom period, and they recorded their answers directly on a computer scannable answer booklet, which were then turned in, so completely anonymous. And to do our analysis, as I mentioned, the data were weighted to provide nationally representative prevalence estimates. So we use Sudan to take into account the complex sample design when calculating those prevalence estimates and their confidence intervals. And then we use t-tests to calculate subgroup differences in prevalence by sex, race, ethnicity, and grade level. So now looking at some of the results. As you know, the physical activity guidelines for Americans recommend that adolescents get 60 or more minutes of physical activity every day, and also do muscle strengthening activities on 3 or more times per week. So this slide shows that overall 15.1% of students were physically active for at least 60 minutes a day, every single day. And male students were significantly more likely than female students to meet this standard, and white students were significantly more likely than black and Hispanic students to meet this standard. Then looking at muscle strengthening activities, here we see that more than half of students met this standard. However, again, male students were significantly more likely to meet this standard than female students. And so NIPANs asked about 33 different types of physical activities that students might participate in outside of PE. And just to give you a flavor for some of the results, here are the top 5 most common and 5 least commonly done activities. So think walking, jogging, active video games, basketball, and weightlifting were most common among high school students. And then cheerleading, marching band, lacrosse, surfing, and ice hockey rounded out the bottom 5. So now turning to sedentary behaviors, here we see the percentage of students who played video or computer games or used a computer for 3 or more hours per day. And when we talk about computer use, we mean for something other than for homework. So this is in addition to any time they may spend sitting at the computer, you know, doing their schoolwork. So almost a quarter of the students did these activities for more than 3 hours per day. And again, male students were more likely to do these activities than female students. And we also found that black students were most likely to do these activities. Looking at another sedentary behavior, though, watching DVDs or videos for 3 or more hours per day. Here we find, though, that female students were more likely than male students to do these activities. And there were differences among all racial ethnic groups, with black students being most likely than Hispanic students, and then white students were least likely to watch DVDs or videos for at least 3 hours per day. And we found that results were similar for TV watching, again, with females greater than males and all the same racial ethnic differences present. So now looking at some of the factors that might affect physical activity levels, here we see the percentage of students who attended PE classes daily. And we found that males were significantly more likely than female students to attend daily PE. And NIPANS also asked about enjoyment of physical education, and we found that males were significantly more likely to report they enjoyed PE, which may account for the results that you see here. With respect to sports team participation, 61% of high school students had played on one or more sports teams during the past 12 months. Again, males were more likely than female students to have played on at least one sports team, and Hispanic students were least likely to have participated on one or more sports teams. In terms of attitudes towards physical activity, we see that generally students have very positive attitudes about physical activity. For each of these five statements, though, we found that males were significantly more likely than females to agree or strongly agree. And then in terms of some of the environmental supports for physical activity, such as having pieces of sports equipment available, having parks nearby, places for them to be active, and also feeling that it's safe for them to be active in their neighborhood, we see that the majority of students agreed or strongly agreed with these statements, but we found that environmental support was greater among white and among male students. And in terms of parental support, we see that the majority of students have good adult support in the form of encouragement, providing transportation, and watching them participate in sports. And then 48.5% actually had an adult who participated in physical activity with them one or more times per week. Okay, now moving on to the nutrition and dietary behaviors. So we released some data in June of this year, and in our initial report, we showed this data, and we were pleased to see that water and milk and 100% fruit juice were the most commonly consumed beverages among high school students. Note, though, that the consumption of sugar drinks, such as soda, sports drinks, and other sugar-sweetened beverages is too high. And to that point, here we show the combination of percentage of students who drank soda, sports drinks, or another sugar-sweetened beverage one or more times per day. So as you can see, almost two-thirds of high school students drank at least one sugar drink per day. Males were significantly more likely than females to do so, and black students were more likely than white and Hispanic students to do so. Next, looking at some different foods, we found that almost 10% of students ate French fries, this is every single day, and 7% ate pizza every single day. We were encouraged, though, that fruit and vegetable consumption were higher than the consumption of French fries and pizza. There were some subgroup differences for French fry and pizza consumption, which were similar to what we found for fast food consumption that I'll show you on the next slide. And then with respect to fruit and vegetables, we found that male students were more likely to eat fruit or consume 100% fruit juices two or more times per day. And those are the only subgroup differences found for fruits and vegetables. So as I mentioned, looking at fast food, and so as you can see here, almost three-quarters of high school students eat at least one meal or one snack from a fast food restaurant every single week. Male students were more likely than female students to do so. Black students were most likely, followed by Hispanic students, and white students were least likely to do so. But that to me was pretty striking that almost three-quarters of students eat fast food at least weekly. And now looking at some of the determinants of dietary behaviors, you can see the first three rows list some of the characteristics of students' dinner environments. Then the last two rows show the accessibility of fruits and vegetables, as well as less healthy snacks in the home. And we were encouraged to find that students have easier access in their homes to fruit and vegetables than they do to snacks such as chips and cookies. And then looking at environmental influences at school on dietary behaviors, and here you can see that most students do get the food that they eat at school, so 64.3% of students. Male students, though, were more likely to get the food they eat somewhere at school, to eat a complete school lunch, and to eat a complete school lunch every single day, while female students were more likely to bring their lunch from home on all five school days per week. The last three rows then look at vending machine availability of different beverages, less healthy snacks, and fruits and vegetables. And as you can see, the percentage of students with access to sugar drinks and to less healthy snacks is much, much higher than the percentage of students who can purchase fruits or vegetables in this way. And now looking at weight perception, and weight loss among adolescents. Here we see that overall, 17.8% of students were overweight, and by overweight we mean at or above the 85th percentile for BMI by age and sex, but below the 95th percentile. The prevalence was similar across all the demographic groups. Oh, and I should also mention that NIPANS included also measures of self-reported height and weight, and so this data comes from the measured height and weight that was taken by the data collectors, and the prevalence based on self-report was actually very similar. And now looking at the percentage of students who were obese, so meaning at or above the 95th percentile, results showed that 19% of students were obese. Females were more likely than males to be obese, and Black and Hispanic students were more likely than white students to be obese. And interestingly here, based on self-report, we found that the prevalence was only about 14%, so a lower prevalence than what was found by the measured height and weight. But this was, although, you know, something that we would want to potentially try to correct, it's not unlike what's found in other studies. And now looking at the percentage of students who describe themselves as slightly or very overweight, you see that this prevalence is actually similar to the prevalence of students who are, in fact, overweight or obese. So overall, 31.3% of students describe themselves as being slightly or very overweight, with females being more likely than males to do so. And now looking at the percentage of students who are trying to lose weight, so as on the last slide, I showed you a little bit over 30% of students describe themselves as slightly or very overweight, but here we see that 47.1% of students are trying to lose weight, meaning that some students who do not actually think of themselves as overweight are still trying to lose weight. And looking at how students are trying to control their weight, here are some different strategies and the percentage of students reporting each. And for the first seven on this list, we found that females were more likely than males to report this type of weight control practice. But note, though, that the prevalence of healthy weight loss strategies is typically greater than the unhealthy behaviors. So it's a lot of data to summarize for you. Male students are doing better than female students with respect to some behaviors, but not all. Male students are more likely to be physically active daily for at least 60 minutes. They play more likely to play on sports teams, to attend PE class. They typically have greater environmental support for physical activity and more positive attitudes towards physical activity. They are more likely, though, than females to play video or computer games for 3 or more hours per day. And they're more likely to drink sugar drinks daily and to eat fast food weekly. Female students, meanwhile, are more likely to engage in the other sedentary behaviors that I mentioned and to be obese. They are doing better, however, at recognizing themselves as overweight and engaging in healthy weight control practices. Differences by race ethnicity, we showed that white students were more likely than Black and Hispanic students to do several healthy behaviors. However, what's perhaps more notable is that Black students are doing significantly worse on a number of behaviors, including sedentary behaviors, drinking sugar drinks daily, and eating fast food at least weekly. With respect to behavioral determinants, we found that overall students have generally positive attitudes towards physical activity. They have good environmental and parental support for physical activity. They have somewhat supportive home environments for healthy eating. And notably, they have many opportunities to eat and drink at school through the school meal program, foods available outside of the school meal program, as well as vending machines. So to address the school environment, CDC released in September of this year school health guidelines to promote healthy eating and physical activity. And I won't go through all of the guidelines, but here are three that are relevant to today's presentation. So schools can implement these guidelines, such as establishing healthy school environments to support healthy eating and physical activity, providing quality school meals and healthy foods outside of the school meal program. They can implement a comprehensive physical activity program, including quality PE, and in doing these things can affect the behavioral determinants that I've talked about and in turn positively affect behaviors in the way that we would like to see. So this is just a small fraction of what can be done with the NIPANS data. We have future studies planned to explore the validity of fruit, vegetable, and beverage consumption questions, which will use the dietary recall data that we have collected for. We also have studies planned to examine the association between behaviors and behavioral determinants, so associations between the factors that influence dietary behaviors and the dietary behaviors themselves, and the same for physical activity, and also studies to examine the association between BMI and the behaviors and behavioral determinants. So, okay. Any questions? I know that was a lot to cover. Yes?
Did you guys, I'm sure you did this, but did you do a cross-tabs with the perception of weight and trying to lose weight?
I do not have that data available with me, but yes.
So, do you recall, like, was it more people that were perceived themselves to be overweight that were dieting? Was there a difference?
So, yes, there are some students who are of normal body weight who are still trying to lose weight.
Right, but was there a difference between the two?
I don't know offhand, I'm sorry, but I could be happy to follow up with you if you'd like.
Just with the advent of Wii and Kinect and all that sort of thing, did they look at the type of video games that these people were playing? Because if you've ever seen these kids in these arcades who are on dance machines, the perspiration is just pouring off.
The survey questionnaire gave several examples of active video games, so something like Dance Dance Revolution, which I know was popular a few years ago, is probably totally out by now, but so there were several examples of types of games listed on the questionnaire, but it did not go into further detail of did you play this game, this game, this game, this game. It was just any type of active video game is what we asked about.
Okay, did you do any crosstab between how much time they spent watching television or computer games and whether or not they also indicated whether you're physically active?
We have not done that yet, but that's a really interesting question.
You bet it is, because if you find that
they're probably
also
doing both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great question. Yes?
I think you said this at the beginning, but what was the population, or where did you do this?
So this was done nationally, and so we select, first, there are three stages. We select school districts, and then schools within those school districts, and then classes within schools. Yes, I don't know who first.
How many of the questions are open-ended?
None of the questions are open-ended. They're all multiple choice.
Right. So the third point here is setting the DEME, association of behaviors and behavioral determinants.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think of the slide you had on the sweetened beverages.
Yes.
And how African-American Hispanic youth were choosing it more. And it was talked about in the last session I was in.
Yeah.
But it makes me wonder why. Like,
right.
It's better.
Mm-hmm.
Or it just is making me feel fuller because I don't want to spend money because I'm a kid.
Right.
You know, so. And it'd be nice to know why.
Exactly. So we can look at, you know, is it vending machine use? Is it available in their home?
Do you know any tools that are looking at that kind of thing?
Well, that's something that we'll explore further. I don't know of other studies offhand that are looking at that more in depth, but it would be interesting to do like focus groups and that sort of thing to look at that more. Yeah. Yes?
Just a question. I was curious about the daily PE thing because it's not so much an optional behavior like the other ones, and why there was
a difference between
the girls and the
boys. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So some schools will require it, some schools don't, and I guess maybe amongst perhaps the difference comes from those schools where it is optional and more boys choose to take that course.
There have also been studies that indicate that the amount of activity that's actually in the physical education class is...
Yes, also varies widely. So.
And with all of the cuts going on in terms of schools, I just read the other day that 292 schools now are going to a four-day week because of lack of monies and all that sort of thing. So here's an opportunity for all of you to become advocates, contact your senators and representatives, make sure that health and physical education gets into the reauthorization of the ESEA Act. So please, please, please become an advocate for those kind of things because health and physical education are things that are going out the door when they make these cuts. And
what is ESEA?
Elementary and Secondary Education Act. Okay. Well, we're fortunate because Jeff Bingaman is on our state. I'm in New Mexico, and he's one of the, and one of my former students is one of his staffers, so I've got a direct pipeline. So we thought that other questions, please.
Yes.
I want, on the, you talk about the number of boys being school lunch compared to the number of girls.
Yeah.
And I think, is there any way to look at it in terms of open versus closed campus?
We do not ask about that on the study.
Okay. Too bad.
Yeah, I mean, it might be something. We do work with the Department of Education, and we have, we can link to their database on, they collect different characteristics of schools. That might be something that we could do in follow-up, but it would require a lot more linking of the two data sets and to go back and ascertain that information. It's not readily available, but yeah, definitely a good question. Yes?
One quick question.
Sure.
Ask about GPA?
I don't know. I don't think we did on NIPANS, but it is asked about on YRBS.
And how accurate are those data? I know we're talking about YRBS, but I'm just curious as to self-report GPA.
I know we've done reliability and validity sub-studies, and all I know is that they're good. I don't have further information on that specific question. But
it certainly would be nice to link these things with academic achievement.
Yeah, and actually, if you go on our website, there's a really nice paper by Sarah Lee. Some of you may know her, looking at not that Sarah Lee. Sarah Lee and Catherine Raspberry, I know. I think they published last year or the year before about the relationship between academic achievement and physical activity and physical education in schools. It's a really great resource, so I would direct you to our website to pull that. And they generally found, you know, physical activity and PE was associated with better academic outcomes, and certainly, and though there was not a lot of definitive evidence, it was certainly not detrimental to academic outcomes, which was an important take-home message, you know, as schools try to make the case that, you know, we need more time for devoted to instruction and to address standardized tests. You know, they were able to show that physical activity and PE did not detract from academic achievement.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody.